Good morning and welcome to Senate Finance. Today is February 20th. It's 8:32. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. With us today is Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Dyson, Senator Thomas, and Senator Elson. We have an informational presentation today. We are working on developing some of the background dealing with the retirement system and the challenges we face with not only the contribution rates as far as what we're going to do with our operating budget, but also the coming attractions of dealing with the unfunded liability and the impact it has on the future operating budgets, not only at the state level, but at the municipal level and in our schools, K through 12, and the university. Today, we're gonna hear from Mr. David Teal. He's Legislative Finance Division Director. He's gonna come before us, sitting right behind me, and speak on the asset liability mismatch and some of the issues that we'll be dealing with at this committee over the next couple of months. And with that, Mr. Teal, if you could please introduce yourself for the record and then begin your presentation. Maybe we'll wait for till the screen drops.
My screen's not live here.
Let's go to At Ease. On record and proceed with fixing a few technical difficulties in our retirement system.
Okay. For the record, I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance, and I didn't do the technical things here, but so thank you, Mindy. Mr. Chairman, you've had Melanie Milhorn from Department of Administration in front of the committee a couple times here in recent weeks, explaining how the retirement system works, and she'll be back in front of you soon giving you more details. You asked me to come today and step back a bit from the details and try to put a context out there for the details that are to come in the future and for possible legislation that's going to be in front of the committee in the near future. And with that, I guess I'd like to start with this graph, which goes a great deal of the way towards explaining why an issue that wasn't on your radar screen or very many people's radar screen 4 years ago is now occupying so much time and attention by this and other committees. I think what you can see on this chart is that It shows accrued liability, which is just another way of saying the system costs, and that's this upper line, the red line. And the lower line is assets, which is simply a description of the amount of money that's on hand to pay those costs. And you can see that for years, the system had a balance between those assets and liabilities. That's from 97 through 2001. And the bottom axis of that chart, the 97 through 05, is actually the year for the data. And as Melanie mentioned the other day, there's a big lag between the year that the data is and the budget year. So above the x-axis there on the rate years, we see that the system liabilities and assets were matched through 2004 and opened suddenly in 2005. There are a couple things that are important about the retirement system. One is that it's got a very long-term time horizon, and that's because it has to look at people's entire working lives and then their retirement as well. So you're looking at 50-year plus time horizon for this system. It's supposed to be a self-adjusting system, meaning that as you can see, the liabilities of the system are growing, but assets are keeping pace with them. It does that because the wage base grows along with your liabilities, and if the wage base alone isn't sufficient to generate assets that continue to match liabilities, you can increase rates. And those rates are calculated by actuaries and adjusted each year. Now, you can see that the system self-adjustments worked pretty well, and then suddenly the system exploded and opened a gap between those two lines. And that gap between liability and assets is what's called the unfunded liability of the system. And it went from virtually zero to $5 million in 1 year. Now, some more things that you'll notice about this graph is that the slope of liabilities, the upper line in red, has a change in slope there. If you had continued the two lines moving together, you'd be roughly halfway between the two lines as they split apart. But I think you can see from there that the liability slope in recent years is steeper than they were growing together, and that the asset line is less steep, which means that gap is growing, not shrinking. And you can also see that not only is the gap widening, but as we said, it didn't drift apart here, it exploded. And the self-adjusting mechanism is set up to handle drift. The question here is, can it handle the gap that's opened as wide as it has? Now, you know why assets fell. They blame that on the market. And you know why liabilities increased. And the actuaries say that's because of medical costs and life expectancy revisions. But it's not just the market falling. It's also some changes in assumptions, lower interest rate that changed the slope of that line. So that we may be to the point that the system simply can't fix itself anymore. And that's why the discussion by this committee is so important, to and why you're going to have to understand the details, and why you're probably going to get at least one bill through here trying to adjust the system more than the rates alone. So there are some questions here that might be prompted by this graph, and certainly if you have other questions, feel free to ask. The ones I look at are, what does this unfunded liability mean? And I don't mean technical sense like defining unfunded liability or exactly what accrued assets are. I mean, what does it mean to retirees, to employees, and to employers? And to retirees, I think it's important that we all know that benefits aren't going to be reduced. We don't have a cash flow problem. And for retirees, this whole discussion is probably not all that important. To employees, their rates are fixed. You can't go in and change them unilaterally. And so there are no direct impacts on current PERS or TERS employees. But there may be indirect impacts, including how many people are hired, what kind of raises they can expect in the future, because employer costs are hugely influenced by the retirement rates. And what that means is you can't afford to give people raises, perhaps. But the biggest impact, the most direct impact, is on employers. There we see higher contribution rates. And you'll continue to see higher contribution rates unless we put some major cash infusion in. So you might say the gap opened very quickly. Can it close as quickly as it opened? As we said, the system is self-adjusting. But I'm not sure that it can adjust on its own reasonably here. By reasonably, I mean with fairly low rates. And I don't know if you still have it, but from Melanie's presentation on Thursday, this sheet, where it showed employer rates, for 8 years, you can see the TERS rates on there were below the actuarial rates. What that would normally mean is that the system is being underfunded and that you would open up a gap, an unfunded liability gap. And then after 8 years, the rate went down, which is an indication that the system fixed itself. So it can happen, but I think it can happen only when you catch it quick enough, and it's sort of a drift rather than a major shift in what happened. So that's sort of the issue with the Mercer lawsuit, is that although it's a self-adjusting system and we could have or should have been paying more into it, we didn't. And because there's such a huge adjustment and a huge gap, we're beyond the point of self-adjustment, and the actuarial assumptions that were used may be responsible for opening up that system to the point where the system cannot fix itself. But we do know that the gap may not close quickly, but it will close. And it closes because rate increases are designed to close the gap over a 25-year period. So we know then that if there's a gap that's going to be closed by itself in 25 years, do we really have a problem? And are we looking for a solution here when we don't need to do anything at all? I'm not going to tell you that there's a crisis, and I can't tell you that don't worry about this at all. It will fix itself. I guess all I can say is ask the municipalities if the current contribution rates are a crisis in their eyes. And I think they'll tell you that they simply can't afford the high rates. So what you're looking at here is the state's role in fixing the system. The state has paid fully for the TERS system, either inside the K-12 formula or outside, but all increases from 04 on have been paid by the state. The state's also fully paid for the cost increases on its own employees. The state's paid a portion of the cost increases for local governments. And the state's not legally responsible for doing that, but they have paid a portion. And that portion, however, may not be as large as some people think it is, because the way it's presented each year is that the state picks up the increased cost. But you can see from this chart that the municipal rates back in 04 were 7% and the state paid nothing. In 05, the municipalities paid the same as they paid in 04, and the state picked up the increase, the excess cost. But then you can see in 06 that the state didn't pick up all of the increase from 04, they picked up only the increase from the prior year, so that the municipal share continues to climb. And now municipal rates have gone up from 7% to 22%. And this is just some averages. As you know, the PERS system for municipalities is not a shared cost system, and the rates vary for municipalities all the way from down under 15% to over 180%. But the cost has not been paid, and this graph shows pretty much the same thing. It just shows it in dollar terms. And you can see that the state has picked up the annual increases from the prior year, but not cumulative increases, so that local contributions have gone from $30 million in 04 to $94 million, $95 million in 08. And that if we continue the same method of paying the increases, and we know that rates shouldn't increase a whole lot next year, then the municipalities will be picking up $170 million in cost next year, up from the $90 million that they're picking up now. So I don't know what you intend to do with municipal PERS costs, but municipal costs are growing rapidly and will continue to grow if you use the same method to fix it as you have in the past. So what we're talking about here is the state paying the bill. And sort of what the chairman asked me to do was get to the point, which is paying the bill is not the same as fixing the system. That there are several issues the legislature may wish to address in fixing the system. They're listed there, and I don't know if I'd go so far as to say the system is dysfunctional now, but it certainly has some broken pieces. And we're working on a fix that's probably going to include making PERS a cost-sharing system like TERS is now. And hopefully that fix will also address those problems. But that's as far as the chairman asked me to go today, not get into the fix or until you have a bill in front of you. And that should be coming soon. I think I know the ARM board passed a resolution urging a cost-sharing system for PERS. And I know that the governor intends to introduce a bill doing that fairly soon. So I expect you'll have a bill in front of you, and these issues will be discussed then.
Thank you, Mr. Teel. We're going to have some questions here. Senator Hoffman?
I'm done, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson, then Senator Ellis.
Yeah, on slide 6, David, on the vertical axis, the percents there, am I right in assuming that's the percent that the employer contributes and the reciprocal is what the employee contributes?
No. The lower line there, Mr. through the chair, Senator Dyson, the lower line is the municipal employer rate. The upper bar is what the state contributed.
No, I understood that. The vertical axis is 45% of what?
45% of payroll. So that if you made $100,000, the employer and the state together contribute $45,000 to the retirement system. Now those rates are expected to climb given the current system. The TERS rate in about 12 to 15 years, the PERS rates will be over 100% and the TERS rate will be over 200%.
Wow.
How many years?
12 to 15 years. So what that means for TERS, for instance, is that if you hire a teacher at $50,000 a year, you're going to be spending $100,000 a year on that teacher's retirement costs.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Ellis. Excuse me, not Ellis. Elton.
That's okay. I wasn't offended, Mr. Chair. On slide 8, you list potential ways of addressing the situation. One of them is the unfunded liability. David, have you done any noodling in your head about what happens to employer contribution rates if we make an extraordinary deposit to the system? There are some people in the building that are talking about $250 million a year for several years. There are others that are suggesting that instead of making an appropriation to the permanent fund or the constitutional budget reserve, that we make an appropriation to the PERS-TERS fund. I mean, have you tried to figure out what the impact of different levels of an extraordinary contribution to the system would do to the employer rate?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I haven't done that myself, but I did ask Retirement and Benefits if I could get that information. They gave it to me back in probably December or so, and the information that I'd asked for was the effect of a $500 million lump sum contribution, and was rather surprised at the minimal impact that the contribution like that would have. The rates, instead of going to 100 and 200% of retirement, go to like 95 and, you know, and 180. It just is not a huge change.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Just on that point, Senator Elton, in the past, we had looked at different dollar amounts of infusion into the liability when we were using actually different numbers. It was fairly dynamic. And I was very surprised at the minimal difference of employer contribution, because that's what we're trying to control and get that down. I think there is an analysis done by Buck on a $500 million infusion, so we'll flesh that out and make sure everybody has copies of that. But it is surprising that what little impact we get, remembering that we're trying to reduce the employer contribution, because that's the issue of most concern in the immediate future. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Governor Palin's budget this year, she is, for the first time, has included funds to help local governments out, $77 million. But, you know, she is saying that this is a one-time approach. But to me, it seems that if we continue down this road, they're going to be, local governments are going to be more and more dependent upon the state to pick up these those dollars, and at our current level of funding, I find that hard to hard for the state of Alaska to continue in that effort. So, you feel that a solution that would come would also have a specific amount that the state of Alaska would have to pony up to assist those local governments on a long-term basis? And would it be as substantial as the right around $80 million on the long term?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, what we have is a spreadsheet that will allow the legislature to look at this and determine what level of contributions you want to make, because it is a decision that's completely up to the legislature. But if your point is that the state this year is paying $77 million, and if that's a one-time action, then the chart that's on the board right now tells you that municipal costs, which are now $95 million a year, $94 million a year, would go up by $77 million next year and every year in the future. And that that cost, well, it won't grow as anywhere near as rapidly as it's as is shown in this chart. It will level out. It's certainly a lot of money for the municipalities to pay, given tax caps, given revenues at the local level.
But under this graph that's before us, you know, in 05 the total was 51.4, and that became the base. And then, as you said, we picked up the difference. So if you follow that scenario in 2009, the base that local governments would have to pick up would be the $171 million, you know, and that I think is the problem, that local governments aren't going to be able to pick up this an additional cost. And if there is an increase under this scenario, the state would pick it up, and you know, that I think is why, if we don't do something, the municipalities are going to end up bankrupt.
Senator Olson, then Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at some of the solutions you've proposed on slide 8, at the bottom you have other technical items. Can you shed some light on what you're talking about as far as what those technical items might be?
Mr. Chairman, I think you'd be better able to do that than I am.
First of all, I guess the real question is, are they attainable? Are there something that we can live with, or the municipalities, can they live with it?
Senator Olson, what we're doing the last few meetings is we're laying some groundwork to be able to better review the bill that the administration is putting together to move the PERS system closer to the TERS as far as pooling, so each community doesn't have an identified liability. There is some questions as far as the accuracy of that. We'll get into that at the proper time. But trying to look at changing the system and having a shared liability, and then having the state come in and pick up a portion. At the end of the day, we have to come up with something that's going to give predictability to the municipalities on their general fund, and also K through 12 education to run the schools. The allocation of costs would kind of be directed more into the issue of what liabilities each individual community have, and how do we deal with the issue. Affordability has been touched on. The unfunded liability, although referenced here in the chart at 6.9, that was as of June 30th, 05. And here we are a year and a half or so later. And we all know that the numbers we've been using is somewhere between 8.5 and 10 billion for the total system. The discriminatory hiring issue we'll get into more detail when we get into that bill, but we're trying to get ahead of some of these issues rather than be in a position where we are now, where we're reacting to historical reports that are 2 years old. So we're trying to not only come up with a solution, but get ahead of potential problems that are coming at us. And that we should have that, I'm hoping, within a couple of weeks. I would like to see the Finance Committee work on this issue while the Resource Committee works on the gas. Because there's going to be quite a bit of work on each one of those two. And it'd be nice time-wise as we move through. So when the gas line hits the finance table, we've got the PERS and TERS pretty much wrapped up.
The last question I have to this, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure who to direct it to, on as far as discriminatory hiring goes, I don't know what that means or what it's going to, but it's my understanding that there's been an alarming rate of numbers of people that have been put on the state's payroll over the last couple of years to the tune of tens of millions of dollars that is costing the state. Does that have an effect on the PERS and TERS gap? And if it does not, or it does, or the does or doesn't, is there the possibility that another addition to this list could be that they're going to be contract hiring so that they're not under the PERS and TERS? So you're dealing more with the private sector as opposed to putting more people to work?
Let me try to answer that, Senator Olson. I had a conversation with a fellow in one of my communities here this last weekend, and this is a classic example of what we don't want to have going on out in the system. When there's an opening for hire, we want the costs of applicants to be equal regardless of what tier structure they're in. What we don't want to have happen is to have one applicant have a substantially lower cost to the employer than the employer puts in his budget to his budget proposals the cost of the higher employee, hiring the lower cost employee, thereby embedding a spread within his budgetary process in his department. We also want to be able to keep a very fluid system at the municipalities and the states for employees to be able to move around and not be subjected to what particular tier they happen to be in. So we're working on that, but that is one of the issues coming in the bill that will recommend that we go to a cost share or a pooling method of dealing with our employer liabilities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins, excuse me.
Yeah, Senator Olson actually asked both of my questions, but let me just make sure that the first one, that I heard it correctly. The term pooling is a euphemism for cost share plan. Is that okay?
Correct.
That's good.
And I'll work on my vocabulary so I don't interchange and make things a little confusing. And I apologize for that. If we could, on the chart on page 7 and also the chart on page 6, Mr. Teal, could we have you just add, like on page 6, add the piece of the bar on top of that? That would be the actuarial calculated rate, or the rate recommended by the actuary.
Mr. Chairman, I can do that. We talked about that briefly yesterday, and I just didn't get time to get back to it before the slides were given to the secretary for handing out. So, but we do have those rates and can plug them into the chart.
That I'd appreciate that, because what the point being, back in like the FY05 and the 06 and the 07, the actuary was calculating a substantially higher contribution rate than that was going in the system, and it just helps fuel the growth. And clearly what we need to do is stop the growth of the liability and then turn it around and drive it as close to zero as we can, as reasonably as fast as we can. Do we have any other questions for Mr. Teal today? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I must have misunderstood when I heard you say in response to one question that if an employee was paid $50,000 that the contribution rate would be $100,000.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, no, you didn't misunderstand. That this gets to the discrimination issue that Senator Olson was talking about. And let me just expand on that a little bit. If you don't change the system now, the rates will continue to grow. And the reason they'll grow is that there's a declining wage base, meaning the system is closed.
That's
to new, to additional people on the defined benefits plan, so that they're on a new plan that doesn't contribute to the unfunded liability. And so, although the unfunded liability is a fixed amount, as Melanie said, it's sort of like a mortgage. You just have a payment of $657 million a year that you need to pay. Well, if you split that among 30,000 state employees, you get one rate. If you have 15,000 state employees, your rate is going to be twice. And so what happens is, as we get more and more people, employees, on the new defined contribution plan, the rate will continue to climb. The cost remains pretty much the same, but the rate goes up. And so you think, well, it doesn't matter because the cost stays level. But if you and I were competing for the same job, and you were a tier one, two, or three employee, and I was a new state employee, the job paid $100,000 a year, and my employer had to look at us and say, well, you both can do the job. But if I hire you with let's don't even go to additional rates in the future. This is where we are right now. If I hire you, the experienced tier one, two, or three employee, I have a benefit cost of $44,000 that I have to pay towards retirement costs. If I hire a new employee, they're not part of that system. They're in the defined contribution plan. Their rate's about 11%. So the employer cost there is $11,000. Well, as Senator Stedman said, this makes it pretty easy decision for the employer, because I'm going to hire the new guy because I save $33,000 a year and I still have the job, which means how are you going to find a job? How are you going to move from an agency to another? Because you priced yourself right out of the market compared to hiring new employees. And the problem gets worse and worse as the rates continue to climb, because the rate for the new people, the defined under the defined contribution plan, won't be going up.
Go ahead. Just to follow, then I did understand that correctly. The chart that you referenced that Melanie Milhorn had distributed the last time, which I don't have before me, does that amortize this over a particular period of time, and the unfunded liability over a particular period of time, and show it coming to an end at the end of that chart? Is that the one you're talking about?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas. What you're really asking is where this gap goes, where those lines go.
Right.
And what happens is the liability line, the upper line, will begin to flatten out. It'll probably rise for another 2 or 3 years, because even if you do something in 2008 about this system, that affects, you won't feed it into your rate calculation until 2011. So liabilities will grow through then, at least. Then it may begin to flatten out and will actually begin to decline as retirees die. And over a long period of time, that liability will go to zero and reach zero when the last person on defined benefits plan dies. Assets will continue to grow as especially if we have rate increases, and then meet that line on the way, the liability line on the way down, and then track the line down to zero, because when the last person's gone, you want to end up with, you have no liability and you don't want to end up with any assets either. So long term, because the system is closed, both of those lines go to zero, but it's going to take, you know, you've still got tier three people that are in their 20s, and you're looking at 50 or 60 years before the system is closed out.
Thank you. I'll try to digest that for a while.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, with that, we're going to wrap up the meeting today here a little bit early, which is kind of nice. But the next meeting will be Thursday, February 22nd at 9 a.m. Co-chair Senator Hoffman is going to review the 07 supplemental appropriation bills, Senate Bill 61, which is the 07 supplemental appropriation, Senate Bill 82, which is oil and gas supplemental appropriations, and Senate Bill 83, FY07, is a fast-track supplemental appropriations. So those will be on the table, again on Thursday, chaired by Senator Hoffman. We have any closing comments? With that, I'd like to go ahead and adjourn the meeting and thank everybody for coming today. Meeting adjourned.